The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Friday, March the 8th, 2019. On the podcast today, I have Brian Larkin, Chief Executive Officer of United Oil and Gas. UOG is a ticker there. And Brian discusses the result of the Coulter appraisal campaign. Plus, I have Neil Ricketts, Chief Executive Officer of Vesarion, VRS, and Neil talks about their recent collaboration with a Chinese aerospace group. Also on the podcast, Sachin Oza, Co-Chief Executive Officer of Rheobold Resources, RBD, ticker there. And Sachin explains the result also of the Coulter appraisal well campaign. Plus, as of Friday, I have Russ Mould, Investment Director at stockbroker AJ Bell, talking about the following companies: Harworth, Avasora Resources, and DS Smith. And as always, I have two lists for you: the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs too. By the way, you can see the top 10 versions of these lists at voxmarkets.co.uk, where you'll see a wealth, a plethora of other content. In fact, right now I'm looking at Industry Experts podcast featuring Zara Nanu, who's the tech entrepreneur tackling the gender pay gap. Also, there's charts from Zach Meir. There's SP Angel's Morning View. Russia joins the space race for mining asteroids. Wow. And there's an article on non-standard finance for your results. Plus, much, much more. That's voxmarkets.co.uk.
Tired of using different sites to research companies? Vox Markets aggregates key financial details, pricing data, and company news into one place. Find out more at voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Brian Larkin, Chief Executive Officer of United Oil and Gas. UOG is a ticker. Brian, thanks for joining me.
Yeah, you're welcome, Justin.
Now, you've got some news out on Coulter, and it's obviously it's a lot of detail in there, so we'll get into that. And but it's worth mentioning, I suppose, as always. People, you call yourself, you want to be a mini major, and you are. Say you've got lots in the portfolio. So just a quick summarise, Brian, of what you've got in the portfolio, because you know everyone sort of is talking about Coulter at the moment. But you've got so much else going on, haven't you?
Yeah, well, we're a fairly new oil and gas company, Justin. The company was formed almost 4 years ago. We listed almost 2 years ago, and since we listed, we've built a diverse portfolio of assets across the UK, Italy, and Jamaica. Mm-hmm. We're a former Tullow Oil team, and our strategy really falls out of our Tullow DNA, and that's a low-risk business in Europe, near-term producing oil and gas business in Europe, coupled with a high-impact exploration business outside of Europe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, well, let's go into the because, I mean, you know, on 25th February, you announced that you'd gone to the southern side of Coulter and you'd found some oil and gas shows there. But the original target, north, hadn't been encountered yet. So take us through what's happened, Brian, if you could.
Yeah, well, I guess, firstly, it's a slightly unexpected result, and that can happen from time to time in the oil and gas industry. And if we think of Coulter as a whole for a second and break it down into two parts, being Coulter South and Coulter North. Mm-hmm. You're quite right. Approximately 2 weeks ago, we announced the result of Coulter South. And what happened there is the fault contained within the Coulter acreage extended a little bit further than our pre-drill expectations, the result of which led us to a brand new discovery that we've named Coulter South. Mm-hmm. So on Coulter South, we've calculated an approximate net pay of 3 meters, or potentially 15 million barrels of oil recoverable. And most importantly, this would exceed the threshold for commerciality. Mm-hmm. So that's the first part of Coulter. The second part of Coulter being Coulter North. So following on from what really was unexpected success of Coulter South, we decided as a joint venture to sidetrack into Coulter North. And we kicked off that drill program approximately 2 weeks ago. Now, whilst we encountered hydrocarbons in Coulter North, they do appear to be smaller than pre-drill expectations. Mm-hmm. But interestingly, and most importantly, the oil and gas shows encountered do provide a potential target on trend to the west within the onshore licenses, which are also held by the joint venture. So the results of both Coulter North and Coulter South will now be combined and fed into our structural models. And with a better understanding now gained over the last couple of weeks throughout the drill program, the potential for the commerciality of the wider Calder acreage will now be assessed.
Yeah, so at the moment, I mean, action is for the time being is stopped there. Is the drilling stopped? Is that right?
Yeah, well, we completed operations probably in the next couple of days. But, you know, I think it's important to point out that we're very pleased with the, well, we're delighted with the discovery of Calder South. This is a really exciting prospect, and it certainly has exceeded our pre-drill requirements for commerciality. So Calder North has not delivered as we would have hoped. However, even this latest result has delivered some interesting additional information, which points to further targets within the license area. So the next steps for the joint venture will be to evaluate the results of the new modelling and work with our joint venture partners to evaluate the best way of commercialising the license.
Yes, but I mean, at the moment, obviously, you say you have limited information, you have to work through it all, and you have to appraise it. But are you saying that South is still potentially commercial?
Yes. But what we need to do now is combine the results of both Calder North and Calder South, bearing in mind the acreage that we have on shore, map the whole lot, and at that stage, then we'll have a better idea of just how commercial Calder as a wider acreage or wider license could be for the joint venture partners and ultimately our shareholders. So it's a good result.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's not. What's disappointing is that, you know, when we discovered Calder South there unexpectedly, you know everyone sort of hoped, hang on, we could double bubble here, could, you know, two for the price of one. But obviously, oddly, ironically, the main target hasn't proved as optimistic as you thought. But like you say, there's still commerciality potential here, isn't it? So I suppose are you a bit down because the primary target didn't sort of pay off as well as you thought?
No, we're not down at all. No. It'd be unfair to say we're down or disappointed, actually. We're quite pleased with the results of the drill program, and we're very, very pleased that we have what could be quite a large and significant commercial discovery. Yeah. It's a question now of just evaluating the wider context of Calder North plus Calder South plus the onshore pieces to map the acreage properly and agree a way forward to commercialise the licence as efficiently and as effectively and as quickly as we possibly can. So whilst certainly Calder North, whilst Calder North, you know, hasn't really hit our pre-drill expectations, Calder South was, it could be quite exciting. We're really, really happy that we have discovered Calder South, and we'll move forward with the joint venture to evaluate the best way of commercialising the licence.
Yeah, it's odd. Things in life never go as planned, but you know, like you
no,
say,
no, that's the nature of the oil industry. Yeah. You know, it's you do as much as you can to de-risk and to map, and you do quite a lot of studies pre-drill, but ultimately the only way of de-risking an opportunity is by drilling it. And you know, the best place to find oil is where there is oil. Mm-hmm. And in the Wessex Basin, it's always been a strategic focus for the company because we see so much potential in that acreage, you know, and ultimately our interest is anchored by which farm, and it is a prolific producing region or area, so it's certainly of strategic interest, and the best place to find oil is where there already is oil.
Yeah, so there's lots of potential here, and just quickly touch on other operations, Brian. What's happening elsewhere in the portfolio there?
Well, we've had an extremely busy start to the year. I mean, we're only approaching mid-March, and since January, we've released CPRs on Watercross, Crown, Selva, and Jamaica. And most importantly, in Jamaica, the potential recoverable barrels has increased to 220 million, and the chance of success has also increased to close to 20%. Coupled with that, we've also completed a name move, which we believe will be a better growth market in the short term for United. And our production concession on Selva has been awarded. So a lot has happened in Q3 this year, and I'm very pleased with progress to date. In addition to all of that, we're confident that we'll drill a well on Watercross later this year. We've had a lot of interest in our Jamaican license from potential farming partners, and we've had a number of serious expressions of interest on our Crown license. So there's a lot happening across the portfolio, and we certainly look forward to updating our shareholders on that over the coming weeks and months. In addition to all of that, we're continuing to look at new opportunities to grow the business. In particular, we're looking at production development opportunities that fit with alternative financing structures such as debt and offtake, and ideas like that that will ultimately reduce any potential dilution to shareholders. But I think it's important to note that we are very opportunistic. So if something was to come along like Jamaica, then we are in a position to execute a deal very, very quickly.
Yeah, and that's, was that part of the advantage of moving to AIM recently?
Ultimately, yes. It means that we can execute deals far more quickly. In the past, you know, if we did anything material, we'd have to produce a prospectus, which would ultimately cost our shareholders part of £250,000 before we even did a deal. So it was always our intention to move the company to AIM. We inherited our standard listing from our RTO with Centerra. So it was always the company's plan to move to AIM. It's just a great case of when, not if. And we certainly feel that it's a better growth market for us, given our ambitious growth plans over the next 6, 12 and 18 months.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Brian, as always, in summary, you know, I know you've got more reasons than three, but in summary, three reasons why someone who's not following you should hit that follow button and add you to their watch list, please.
Yeah, I could give you far more than three, Justin, but I'll give you three. We have an excellent committed team. Each of our team has been handpicked by the exec team. They work incredibly hard to create as much value as they can from the existing asset base and to contribute to the growth of the company. Also, we have delivered. We've done what we said we'd do from pre-IPO right up to today. We've done what we said we'd do. And thirdly, we're a high growth company. And to put some context on that, 2 years ago, we were literally working on our dining tables with a license and an option in Italy. And today, you know, less than 2 years later, we have a balanced portfolio of 8 licenses that balances risk and reward. We're fully funded and we're fully primed. We're locked and loaded, Justin, for the next step in the development. Everything's in place for us to kick on now. Everything, and I'm really looking forward to the next weeks and months ahead as we develop the existing assets and grow the business.
Marvellous stuff, Brian. Good to chat to you, and like I say, lots going on, so no doubt we'll be catching up in the not too distant future. Thank you very much.
My pleasure, Justin. Thank you.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Neil Ricketts, CEO of Versarion. That's VRS ticker. Neil, thanks for joining me.
Good morning, Justin. Always a pleasure to talk to you.
Yeah, well, you too, and you're always busy. And do you know what? I have people approach me right now, or someone as recently as today on Twitter, asking if I've heard about Versarion. So whenever I say at the start of a podcast, please give us a summary, it's worth doing because there's always new people to the story, you know. So if people never heard of Versarion, Neil, just summarise what you're about, please.
Yeah, sure. So we were an advanced materials company, started in 2011 out of my garage. We've grown to have some of the greatest technologies which have been identified in this century, mainly graphene. And I just got slightly interrupted there. My Nomad has just walked past me, so I was just making sure that I wasn't saying anything wrong. And we're developing these graphene applications for everyday items, everything from aerospace to automotive and packaging and clothing and all sorts of different great uses.
Marvellous stuff. Okay, so you've announced, you're getting quite busy in China, and you've announced a further collaboration with a Chinese aerospace company. So take us into the details of this, Neil, if you could.
Yeah, so China is mad keen on aerospace at the moment. The government's putting a lot of money into their state-owned entities. We announced just before Christmas an agreement to look at applications for one of the largest ones, and then this is the largest one. And it's quite a limited pool of aircraft builders and space exploration companies in China. So it's kind of easy to work out that we've managed to cover all the bases here and actually establish a really, really good set of working relationships with those people that are in that sector in China.
Yeah, well, I imagine it's hard working with any big company, and but if you're working with a state-owned Chinese aerospace company, it must get even trickier. What's it like to work with these kind of companies?
Well, it's very difficult and it's very challenging, and it's not only have you got cultural issues to overcome, but you've also got a very, very quick and expanding economy. The Department of International Trade on our books makes it so much easier for us to have those kind of political conversations as well as the technical and the commercial things that are going on.
Yeah, and so how does this collaboration work? What do you hope to get to, and is there any idea of a time frame as to when it'll be sort of sorted and go beyond an MOU?
Yeah, so it's a process that we're going through. Obviously, Chris was out in China in January, and this is a result of some of the conversations that went on then. It's also to do with the fact that within government circles, we're being extremely well recognized. And so the process is the same, no matter whether it's a Fortune 500 American company or a Fortune 500 Chinese company. We get an inquiry or an initial meeting. We then have an NDA, which can sometimes take a long time to get through because they're quite challenging documents to make sure that everybody is protected. Then we have the letter of intent or the memorandum of understanding, and then we move on to the commercial side and the technical side. And that's when things get really exciting for me as an engineer, because we're actually making things, we're challenging the convention of what's going on at the moment. Mm-hmm. And both of these two large Chinese companies, their main thrust at the moment is not necessarily passenger aircraft, it's actually space exploration. And this is a really, really hot topic with everything that's going on with the stuff that's being launched. Israel's just launched its first probe to the moon. China's following up with that. Russia's doing stuff, and America is obviously all over that with the things that's happening at SpaceX. Yeah. So a really, really, really exciting sector to be involved in, and lots of challenges that graphene can really help with.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, well, let's talk about the share price. I know you can't do anything about it, and it's not down to the CEO. You hold a decent chunk of shares. But if I'm looking at the chart here, so I'm going back to September 2017, you were about 12 and a half pence. September 2018, you were like, 180, £1.80, more than 10 bagged there. And recently, it's been a bit of volatility. You've come down, touched 75 pence. You bounced up, 94. What's happening? Why is it so volatile at the moment,
I think there's a whole range of different circumstances that are going on at the moment. Obviously, we've got stuff going on with China and America and trade deals and things like that. We've got a lot of uncertainty in our own economy brought about by Brexit and not establishing a conclusion at the moment, which hopefully will get resolved in the next few weeks. And kind of everyone's really, really nervous, and that leads to a lack of confidence that we probably had a year ago. Nothing's changed with the business. We're the management team are all focused on what's going on. I'm actually in our brokers today, and the whole objective here is it's a strategy meeting to make sure that all of the key managers are all pulling in the same direction, and that we're all very clear about what we need to achieve. So my job as a CEO is actually to look 4 or 5 years in the future. So when I look at the day-to-day share price, you can look at it, and when you can see the short-term pain that some of our shareholders are going through, and I'm one of those. The thing is that this is a journey, and we've just got to be mindful that what we're doing here is creating a great business, and that all of this work that the guys are putting in, and they are banging the hours in at the moment, they're making sure they're in all the right places. Steve was in Michigan last week talking to the automotive manufacturers. We've got stuff going on in China. We're just having a conference call at the moment with our Bruno. We're very, very busy, and we've got to keep our mind on that. Yeah, the short-term share price is a problem, and it's painful for everybody, but we've got to keep our eye on the longer-term game.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Marvellous. And Neil, well, listen, as always, if someone's listening to this, I like the sound of it, but not following the story yet, like the person who asked me if I'd heard of you, give them three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page and add you to their watch list, please.
Okay, so Viserion, as I said before, is an advanced materials company with some fantastic connections. It has the University of Manchester and the University of Cambridge as stakeholders in our business. That gives us access to lots and lots of facilities in the UK. So our connections is the one thing. Our ability to be able to follow through on this business plan has been demonstrated by the collaborations that we've signed over the last 12 months with big global companies. And the last thing is, I'm the large shareholder, and therefore my aims and aspirations in the long term are all aligned with those of the long-term holders.
Marvellous stuff. Neil, good to chat to you, and like I said, always busy, always releasing news, so no doubt we'll be catching up in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Sachin Oza, Co-Chief Executive Officer of Rheobold Resources, RBD. Stick it there. Sachin, thanks for joining me.
Thank you very much for having me, Justin.
Yeah, and you've some big news out today, the completion of the Coulter drill. And we'll go into the detail of that, because I know it's not straightforward, and I think some of the market's confused as to, you know, what is going on there. But as always, quickly, just a quick summary. Rheobold, of course, Coulter is not your only prospect or asset. Can you explain, give a brief summary of what you have in the portfolio, please, Sachin?
Yeah, sure, Justin. So the strategy of Rheobold Resources is that we're an AIM-listed upstream oil and gas company focused primarily on pre-cash flow assets with low technical risk. And Rheobold provides capital to these low technical risk projects to get near-term drilling take place and on success to move that asset to the point of monetization soon thereafter. The project portfolio for the types of assets that I've described is spread globally. We're in the UK, as you said, with Coulter. We also have assets in East Yorkshire with the West Newton opportunity. We have assets that are now in production in California. And these are all onshore conventional assets generating extremely attractive returns. And we have a project in Romania, which is a gas project, which we look forward to drilling later on in a few months' time, hopefully.
Marvellous stuff. So the completion of the Coulter drilling, like it's maybe a bit of a surprise there, because you announced previously you'd discovered another sort of a gas show, an oil and gas show, a column of oil and gas that wasn't expected, and now you're calling that a South Coulter, and then you've gone for the main target here. So tell us what's happened, if you could, Sachin.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, Justin, we're delighted to have been able to announce a discovery at Coulter South. It's estimated to have a P-mean 15 million barrels of recoverable oil by Corallian, the operator, and that is likely to be highly economic and commercially very attractive. However, the result, as I think you'd highlighted, was surprising, because the initial prognosis was not what was realized in the drilling of this well, and therefore has led to a situation where we have to reevaluate what our imaging is of the subsurface based on those results. But as I said, we are delighted by the fact that we have made this discovery.
Yeah, so, yeah. I mean, this is not a surprise here. And I've seen one or two cynics saying the Southern Coulter discovery probably isn't commercial and you may walk away. Is there any substance behind this? I mean, at the moment, like you say, you have to further evaluate this. What is the position here?
Yeah, so let's just run through that quickly, Justin. So the 98-11A6 well, that was the well that we have just drilled, and with the sidetrack. And essentially, it's like two wells, giving us the information of two wells. And it found 3 meters of pay in the target reservoir horizon, which is the Sherwood Sandstone. And we believed we were appraising a well that was called the 98-11-3 well to the north of that location. As it turned out, we were appraising a structure to the south of that location called the 98-11-1 well. And we targeted and drilled what is likely to be the down dip extent of that larger structure in the south. So we have appraised effectively the 98-11-1 well as opposed to the 98-11-3 well. And that south area has become more aerially extensive than we previously envisaged. So effectively, as you head south, you get a greater section of pay that shares the same oil water contact as we drilled in the 98-11-6 well. So that's why it was a surprising result. We ended up appraising the structure that was more aerially extensive to the south than what we had anticipated doing, which was testing the structure to the north. I hope that makes it, you know, relatively clear as to why it was off the original prognosis. But what is not true to say is that having appraised this southerly structure, that means it's uneconomic. 15 million barrels recoverable is very likely to be both highly commercially attractive and very economic indeed.
Yeah, okay. So, and now, like you said, what happens now? Where do you go from here?
Yeah, so the problem that we've got is because what we had originally attempted to delineate as the discovered resource to the north is not what we've ended up having. What we have to do now is really focus on appropriately delineating what we have in the south. And because of the information we have now, which is the old 98111 well, the 3D seismic data, and effectively two pieces of new information from the 98116 well, the well we've just drilled and completed, because it counts as the original well plus the sidetrack, we can incorporate all of that to more appropriately delineate this southerly structure. And that's now the job for Corallian and the joint venture partnership in order to determine how best to take this asset forward. And fundamentally, from a Rehobolt perspective, how best to extract value from that asset for our shareholders.
And do you think that, I mean, everyone involved in coal today, the share prices are taking a bit of a hit. Do you think that's because, like I said, if you'd hit the primary target, you had a plan of attack ready to go forward. But as it is, because it's quite a surprise of what's happened here, and we're not saying it's not commercial, but just because, you know, it was unexpected, as you know, the market doesn't like uncertainty or anything out of the ordinary. Do you think that's why people are a bit uncertain as to what's going on? Do you think that's why share prices have taken a bit of a knock?
Yeah, I think that's absolutely correct, Justin. I mean, if we could come out straight away and say we had it already delineated, this is the forward plan, this is how we monetize the asset, then it would be a very different response. So the only thing that we've got now that's different to that is we need a little bit of time in order to determine how we take that strategy forward. But here's the thing that I would say about Rehobolt. We are confident of being able to come up with that plan. But in the meantime, the Rehobolt portfolio is carrying on with significant activity with wells currently underway, for instance, at Munros well, but also significant activity thereafter. And while all of that's happening, I can assure you we'll be working very hard in the background to come back to the market and explain how we are going to extract value from this asset.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Okay, well, as always, Sachin, one final thing. People are listening to this right now and see opportunity here, but are not following the story. Give them three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page on Vox and add you to their watch list, please.
Certainly, Justin. So what we've put together and described already is a significant amount of activity within the portfolio that Rehobolt has. There's a lot of activity specifically going on in California, with successful wells having already taken place and a new well being drilled now, all of which can be monetized by putting that into production very soon after the discovery wells and success has taken place. There is also the follow-on activity within the existing portfolio there, plus all the wells that we have coming up in the remainder of this year in the UK and in Romania, all of which I think are extremely high impact opportunities and can lead to significant re-rating of our shares.
Marvellous stuff. Sachin, good to chat to you as always. And like you said, lots going on in the portfolio, so no doubt we'll be catching up again in the not too distant future. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Russ Mould, Investment Director at stockbroker AJ Bell. You all right, Russ?
Yeah, very well, Justin. How are you, mate?
Yes, I'm not too bad. Another sort of interesting week in the markets, and I just think we're all waiting for things to happen.
There's a lot playing at the moment, so I'm at home in Brighton enjoying the view today. So
yeah, Brexit and trade talks.
Which is nice, but you're just getting some deep thinking done, thinking about trade talks and macro, but and also obviously some stocks.
Yeah. Well, let's go into that. You've got two small caps, one income potentially. Yes. So let's go into the first one. What's the first one, Russ?
So the first one's Harworth, which is a stock that we've talked about before, HWG, small cap, 400 million cap, and based in Rotherham. We first looked at it, last November, I think, but about 120p, and it's now 122, so a slow burn, but that was always the master plan anyway. Remember, this is it's the ex-property of UK Coal, really. It's an urban land regenerator, clean, sell and develop. Beds and sheds is what they call it, which I think is being a bit self-disparaging, in the north and the Midlands of the UK. We talked about the January trading statement, which was good. And we've had the full year numbers now, which, you know, again, look very strong. And the most important things here, probably dividend up 10% to 0.91p, though the yield's pretty small. But most importantly, the net asset value figure was up a good 10% to 137.5p. Stock traded about an 11% discount to that, which is quite nice. 93 million of disposals in the year, 60 million of purchases. They're actually backed by M&G in a big northern logistics project at the moment. And the outlook statement read pretty well. They did mention Brexit. They did mention economic uncertainty. But roughly 50% of the planned sales for the year are already agreed, in legal or in exchange. And they're generally happening above the last book value. So that's a good sign. So we'll stick with this one as a nice, steady, slow burn, I think.
Yeah, now you mentioned net asset value. Let's say a new investor's looking at this and they've got their head around looking at the balance sheet, you know, and the position of finance there, and they're looking at net asset. So, you know, how is that relevant to a company? Because some companies trade at a massive premium, yeah, others don't. What's the score there? What do you do with that?
I mean, for tech companies, their assets are basically people and intellectual property, so there's nothing tangible there. So if you were to liquidate the company, they probably wouldn't, you know, you could probably sell the intellectual property brands and the rights, but it's a bit trickier. With things like property companies, they tend to trade off asset values because the real secret to the company is its assets. Mm-hmm. They normally trade at a bit of a discount to NAV because things can go wrong, the economy can turn down, management can make a mistake, or there's tax issues. But generally speaking, you know, an 11% discount to NAV isn't big. I mean, you've got some of the big shopping centres trading at 40% discounts to NAV and more because people are pricing in big drops in the price of that particular of those properties.
Yeah.
But I think with this case, you know, when they're providing urgently needed commercial land and housing land for the North and the Midlands, I'd like to think that over time the NAV would trend up. I mean, clearly, if the UK economy drops in a hole after Brexit, that's going to be a bit of an issue. But, you know, long term, I think they're clearly providing a pretty valuable service here.
Yeah. And well, the chart looks decent. Is that September
nice
high, but it's consolidated now. It's fallen back, consolidated. It should hopefully pick up a little bit now. So
exactly.
HWG. What's next?
So the next one is Avasoro Resources, ASO. It's a gold miner, AIM quoted. One of the less things we've had less success with. I looked at it last June. It's gone from 250p to 160p, which is a bit annoying because the macros worked out generally pretty well. You've got the ECB backtracking on policy again this week.
Yeah.
You've got big M&A in the gold business with Barrick Gold and Randgold, then Newmont and Goldcorp, and now Barrick Gold and Newmont. But gold miners, as we know, were tricky things, and the guidance for production was okay, 210 to 230,000 ounces for this year against 220,000. But average all-in costs are actually going up from around $1,000 to $1,100 in the coming year. So that's a little bit disappointing at the Liberia and Burkina Faso mines. And that's a trend we've seen across a lot of gold miners, actually. They are actually encountering some cost inflation. So right macro, lots of M&A. Gold prices just pulled off a little bit. You know, I still think gold is an interesting hedge right now, given that central banks are pulling away from their sort of tightening policy and going back towards loosening. Mm-hmm. But we know gold miners are tricky. This is a classic example. We'll stick with it because, you know, I think the gold story is quite strong. But at the moment, you know, the miner's not necessarily quite delivering as what we would have hoped.
Yeah, that's the trouble, Sam, isn't it? Gold is a good idea, but then you've got the problems of an individual company. So what I've done this week? I've just taken a little toehold in an ETF on gold producers.
Oh, yeah.
So I just think, I don't know, and in fact, silver, because silver's way down.
Yeah.
You know, the gold-silver ratio.
It's relative to gold, actually. Yeah, there you go.
So I'm just having a little dabble there because I'm a bit cautious. I'm going to cash a bit more of late because I do think for a downturn. Okay, let's go for the income.
So DS Smith is the first one we're going to look at here. It's a FTSE 100 firm. It's a packaging specialist like Smurfit Kappa and Mondi. And it's really, there's been a good organic story there because it provides packaging for consumer staples, pharmaceuticals, and also corrugated packaging for e-commerce. So there's a bit of online magic dust there. Mm-hmm. It's also grown by acquisition, Otor, SCA Packaging, Interstate, and then Europack last year, a Spanish company. Now, this has been quite controversial. £1.5 billion acquisition funded by a £1 billion rights issue last June. And if you look at the chart, they announced the deal on the 4th of June, and that was when the share price peaked. Mm-hmm. And I think people were just frightened that this was a bit of a fully priced deal, a bit of a we must have it deal, and that they'd taken on too much debt. And so the shares have gone all the way down, and that's what's, I think, potentially generated the yield angle here, because it's now offering a yield of just under 5%, more than twice covered by earnings on a forward PE of about 11 times. And the good news is I think they've slightly seen the light They've actually just sold their plastics business. Now, that's good for two reasons. One, obviously, environmentally, I think it shows that they're being aware of ESG concerns. And secondly, it pays down a big chunk of the debt pile that they've got. And as we all know, lower debt means lower risk. Although the deal is slightly dilutive in the short term, it helps earnings in the long run, helps cash flow. And, you know, less debt, less risk, you know, supports the dividend. So it's got a decent track record here. So we'll stick with it. And I think, you know, I know there are lots of bigger yields in the FTSE 100 right now, but I think a yield of around 5% twice covered by a firm that's deleveraging looks, you know, again, respectable, pretty long term for income seekers.
Marvellous stuff. Well, do you know what? I've decided that an alert, a price alert, and a relative strength alert. So if the price weakens, but it comes back.
There we go.
Because it dipped at £3. It bounced up to £3.50. It's come off a little bit, so it may settle in between there. So
yeah, that's what I would expect.
We'll see. But excellent stuff, Russ. Thanks for that. And
pleasure.
Any plans for the weekend there?
We kids' birthday parties this weekend, so it's going to be all action. But right now, I'm just going to go back and cogitate the view and have a ponder for 10 minutes before I knock out my latest weekly.
Yes, that's good. That's called mindfulness in these days, isn't it?
There you go. It is mindfulness. Yeah. Exactly.
Cheers, Russ. Speak next week.
Have a lovely weekend, my friend. Take care. Bye-bye now.
OK, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at 5, Horizonte Minerals, HZM. At 4, United Oil and Gas. Brian was just on the podcast. At 3, Infrastrata, INFA. At 2, Ectech, EQT. And number one most followed, big faller yesterday. Is it falling today as well? Yes, still down today. It fell massively yesterday. It's Quiz PLC. And a bit of a trading update, profit warning there. OK. Most liked RNSs, or most read as well. At 5, Fast Forward Innovations, 2 million investment in EMAC Life Sciences. At 4, Europa Metals, removal from the official list of the ASX. At 3, Vesarion, further Chinese aerospace collaboration. Of course, Neil was on the podcast. At 2, Infrastrata, project update. And the most read RNS came from United Oil and Gas, completion of Coulter appraisal campaign. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos apreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.